What number is this, Chip?
Episode 16.
Your friendly neighborhood kidnappers commentary. You want to cut that again?
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short. I know.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Zilch episode 16, your friendly neighborhood kidnappers commentary. I am Jeff Hewlett, and I am joined by
Ken Mills
and Craig Cohen.
All right, guys, how's everything going?
Doing awesome.
Doing very good, very good. It's good to talk to you guys again. Love getting together and talking monkeys with you guys. It's just fantastic. Before we get into that, let's check the monkeys mailbag.
P.O. Box 9847.
Craig, would you like to read this one?
Sure thing. And we have a 5-star rating review from Lawrence S. titled Good Clean Fun. And he says, this is the podcast I have been waiting for. You make my drive to work something to actually look forward to. It's great to hear others share my enthusiasm for all things monkeys, and your show is entertaining, informative, and all around fun. Looking forward to spending more morning drives with you. My first exposure to the monkeys was the Saturday morning reruns in 1969, and had the first 3 monkey albums handed down to me from my sister. Would that make me a first generation fan? Anywho, keep up the great work from your number one fan. And that was a great review. And I would say that that qualifies him as a first generation fan.
Very cool feedback. So great to have that. Okay. You know, thing about this whole first generation thing is like, and we get this in the world of KISS too, is like people say, I was a first generation fan. It's like, so that really boils down to that at the age of 6, you were able to form really great musical opinions. It's kind of weird, you know.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't think it's fair to hold it as sort of an elitist attitude when it's right. You know, just sort of qualifying when you came on board. I'm a Rolling Stones fan. Mm-hmm. I wasn't alive when the Rolling Stones came out.
Right.
I didn't really have a chance to be you know on board with them when they first started. So I think it's helpful to sort of, you know, see where somebody's perspective is. Mm-hmm. And that's what's great. And I think the difference between the Monkees fans and KISS fans is sometimes KISS fans hold it against younger fans.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But it's weird because it's one thing if you find something as a child, it's another thing if you can still appreciate it as an adult.
Oh, definitely.
Because there's like a lot of TV shows and a lot of things that I remember from being a kid. Like, for example, I dug the Banana Splits at the time. I don't know if I could, like, sit down and listen to a Banana Splits CD now.
Yeah. Mm.
And mm-hmm. There are TV shows. I'm sure, Jeff, there's got to be a TV show that you remember with fondness from the 70s or 80s or whatever.
Oh, God.
And then you go out and you buy the box set thinking, this is when television was television. And you sit down and you just can't watch it. Like,
yes.
I love Isis, the TV show with Joanna Cameron and Shazam, but they're not that good. They're just not. And I'll always have a crush on Joanna Cameron, but just the show does not hold up.
Yes, yes, yes. I know exactly what you're going to ask. Is there any? Yes, for me, I can give you a specific example. And this
I know what this is.
You know
be.
What it is. Yes. Craig knows what it is because I was so depressed. I remember when I was a little kid and I remember loving Buck Rogers. And a year and a half or so ago, I had a Netflix account and I was binging on all kinds of stuff. And I said, you know what? Let me go back and watch these old Buck Rogers shows. It'll be like this big nostalgic thing and I'll feel like a little kid again. And I couldn't get through the first episode. I didn't remember it the way it really was. I remembered this kind of, you know, childlike haze where you had the robot guy, the tweaky robot guy, mm-hmm. and you know, and it was fun, and you had the spaceships and shooting around and flying around, and there was some real adult themes in that first mm-hmm. episode, and it almost felt like I was watching like a late night HBO thing or
yeah,
something,
because yeah.
it was just so sexualized, and mm-hmm. I you know, seeing his hair sweater popping out of this big, you know, V cut shirt, and I'm like, oh my God, this is so 70s gross. Like I felt like my television was covered in grease and sweat. It was just nasty. So it was a shame, and I felt really bad. I don't know what I saw in that as a kid.
I tried to watch that show as well, and what it really has going for it is Commander Deering having to get into some interesting outfits occasionally and things like that. But to me, the show kind of picks up when Hawk comes along.
Yes, he was a cool character.
As cool as he looked, and he was badass and all that, it's still a guy with feathers on his head. And he just looked like he was always molting or something, like, you know. And did he have to lay egg in the special episode? Like, where the character of Spock was developed? And we get, like, Ponfar. Do we have, like, later an episode in, like, the fifth season or sixth season of Buck Rogers where he would have had to, you know, spawn a child?
Yeah, egg farm.
Yeah, he'd have egg farm. He had to lay an egg.
Hey, that's a groovy button. What does it say?
Love is the ultimate trip.
Oh, that's a nice thought.
That's a groovy button. What does it say?
Save the Texas Prairie Chicken.
Anyhow, so the one thing about the monkeys is that they have survived and thrived in our cultural lexicon, and it's just cool that no matter when you got into the monkeys, we're just glad you did, and we're glad that you're here with us today.
We'd also like to send a shout out to our friends at monkeyland.yuku.com. It's one of the Yuku message boards out there. They've been talking about the monkeys for a very long time, and they've had some very nice things to say about the Zilch podcast. So I'd like to say hello to Nora Lou, Little Metal Bottle Tops, Monkeys Fan 1960, and of course Bettina, who says, "I must tell you, the Zilch podcast is my new favorite thing, and I'm marathoning all the episodes in a super fun effort to get caught up. I love, love, love what you are all doing. Thank you, Love Beats." So thank you for listening. Keep it up and tell your friends. We also received an email from John Vogt from Montana. He said, "When a show can be as good and maintain the level of fun and quality, even with the host chair being occupied by someone else, that says something. Great job. I get the feeling that not only are you all monkey fans, but also friends. Thank you for being my monkey friends and helping me pass the time on the night shift." Well, John and Montana, we're glad to do it. We're always glad to have you folks monkeying around, and it's great we can all monkey around together no matter where we are or what we're doing. And you can send an email to us at zilchmonkeys, one word, zilchmonkeys@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at zilchcast. So find us wherever and hook up with us and let us know what you think. Well, you guys ready to get into this monkeys color cast commentary?
Oh, sure. Always. This is these are always a lot of fun to record. Melanie brings so much great information when we get together.
And one thing I'd like to mention real quick, I was kind of surprised when I watched this episode in preparation to kind of do this, that I found it interesting that they play the bass line for She in the incidental music. Check it out about midway through. Listen for it.
Oh, neat.
So you guys ready to watch this?
Yes, let's go.
All right.
Hey, wait a minute, guys. You know what? It's 7:30 Central Time. It's time for the monkeys. I wonder if anybody around here's got a television set.
Hi, friends. Ralph Williams, one of the world's largest...
Holy cliffhanger, it's Batman.
The monkeys, brought to you by Kellogg.
Tonight's Monkeys Color Cast commentary is brought to you by The Red Maracas Emporium. Sure, we sell other instruments, but for some reason, our red maracas seem to get the most attention. Ask Boris for a deal on our $6 maracas, now with Front Street parking, or you can use the parking in the rear. Just exit through the heart.
Hello, and welcome back to what is our fourth Monkeys Color Cast commentary, and this week we are talking Your Friendly Neighborhood Kidnappers. On the DVD it says Kidnapper, but we assure you it is Kidnappers. As always, I'm Craig Cohen, and I'm joined by Jeff Hewlett.
How's it going?
Jeff, I'm very, very excited to talk to you tonight.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited too, and I don't want to jump the gun here, but this episode has a Star Trek connection, so... Very happy to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. And Monkey Magic author Melanie Mitchell.
Hi. I'm excited, Melanie. Too.
Yeah, yeah. How you been?
I've been fine. I didn't know there was a Star Trek connection.
Ah, yeah. So we will learn about that as we go on.
Hey.
So, Melanie, I know we often introduce you as monkey magic author Melanie Mitchell, but I thought real quick we would go over the details behind your book and how people can find it and the best way for people to interact with you. So if you don't mind doing a little plugging, plug away.
Oh, why, thank you so much. The full title of the book is Monkey Magic, a book about a TV show about a band. And it is an episode guide and commentary to the whole TV series, as well as Head and the two TV specials. And it's a lot like the color cast commentaries we're doing. It's just basically my thoughts about the episode and some nitpicks and some trivia and things like that. Mm-hmm. I'm on Facebook. I have a Facebook group for Monkey Magic. I don't know the URL exactly, but search for it. You'll find it. You can also link to me through the Zilch podcast Facebook page because I'm on there all the time.
Right.
I also have a Tumblr blog, which is bluemoonalto.tumblr.com. Mm-hmm.
And the book, people can get at Amazon, they can get at Barnes & Noble or any other fine book retailer.
Well, I have to emphasize, you can get it online. Uh-huh. You can walk into a Barnes & Noble store and ask them to order it for you, but you're not going to find it on the shelf. I'm not that big. And it's also available from all the ebook sellers, including iBooks and Smashwords.
Yes, my copy is a e-copy, and it's loaded up and referenced often on my Kindle device.
And mine is an iBooks copy on my iPad.
Awesome.
Excellent. So yeah, if you're enjoying these color cast commentaries, definitely check out Melanie's book because it is a great companion piece. And Melanie really has a great take on the series and has a really, really informed opinion. That's really fun to read as well.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure. So as I said, we're talking your friendly neighborhood kidnappers. And Jeff Hewlett, you actually noticed, as I mentioned in the intro, that on the DVD copy, the Rhino release, on the menu, it listed as kidnapper, singular.
Yeah, I was just sitting here looking at it and getting ready to record this commentary. And I remember when I looked it up online to see where we were in the series, and it said kidnappers. There's a wiki page that lists all of the episodes, and there's a kind of a couple of cursory facts about each one. Nothing really too in-depth unless you click through to each episode itself. But I remember it said kidnappers on that page, and when I looked at this on the DVD menu, I was like, wait a minute, that's weird. I wonder what kind of – we have a little discrepancy going on.
Yeah, yeah. But we assure you it is kidnappers. And the episode aired on October 3rd, 1966, directed by James Frawley, who directed the bulk of the series. And it was written by Dave Evans, who, according to my research, had writing credits on 9 episodes?
That sounds about right. He was the sole writer on 3.
Okay.
The other two being Don't Look a Gift Horse in the Mouth and The Audition.
Excellent. And he also worked on The Bill Cosby Show and Love American Style.
Mm-hmm. He was also one of the credited writers on Mickey's episode, Mija Kojo.
Ah, cool. Very cool. So we're gonna hear Dave Evans' work again as we continue our journey through the Monkees TV series. And I guess we've got some notable guest stars to talk about. Melanie, do you want to go over them?
Certainly. There's the character of Nick Trump, the bad guy manager of the rival band. He's played by an actor named Andre Philippe, and he was a frequent guest star on such TV shows as Hawaiian Eye, Mr. Novak, and The Wild Wild West. And he also appeared in the great swinger movie Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice.
And I actually have to admit that I know him most from the, I guess, the blaxploitation movie Black Belt Jones, which is a favorite of that early 70s sort of kung fu explosion that, that happened when Bruce Lee was on the scene.
One of the best.
And we also have Vic Tayback, and you wanted to share some thoughts about him, right, Melanie?
Certainly. Vic Tayback appeared on The Monkees 3 times, and he was always cast as the junior of two bad guys in each of his appearances on The Monkees. But he's best known for a character that he played in the movie Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, and again in the TV series Alice. I grew up watching that particular TV series. I was a young teenager when it came on the air, and as a very sensitive and impressionable young lady, I watched that show and I saw Vic Tayback playing a cantankerous, foul-mouthed, irritable, and generally disagreeable boss named Mel.
Yep.
Oh no.
And it got its own spinoff too, Mel's Place, didn't it?
Which is why to this day I do not like being called Mel.
Completely understandable.
Well, guess what, Melanie? Guess what? We got a surprise for you. Vic Tayback is also our Star Trek connection.
Oh yes.
Yeah. He
of
was
course,
in
yes.
a second season episode a called piece A of Piece of the Action. Yes. Yes.
Cracko.
One of Craig's very favorites.
Yeah, I do enjoy that episode. And I guess our final guest star is Lewis Quinn, who plays,
the chief bad guy.
Yes, the chief bad guy. I was looking for the proper word.
The other kidnapper, yes. Yeah.
And it looks like he had a pretty substantial career that included a lot of different stuff, all the way up through the starting in the 1950s and leading right up to the 1980s. So a lot of different appearances there.
Did you see that he was in 2 movies with Mickey Dolenz?
I did not.
He was in both Keep Off My Grass and Linda Lovelace for President.
Oh, wow. So
I don't know if they were in any scenes together, but they were in the same film.
Yeah, so there must have been a casting director that was a fan of the show. All right, so are you guys ready to get into the episode?
There is actually one thing I wanted to talk about before we get started.
Oh, right, yes. We have so much to talk about before we get started.
We do, and I apologize for that.
No, I get so excited about watching these episodes, but please, we have plenty of time to talk.
Well, normally during the episode, I talk about music substitutions, songs that were switched in for a romp or a performance during reruns. The problem is with this particular episode is the record is not entirely clear. There are 3 different songs in this episode. In the original broadcast, there are 2 dance numbers in the middle of the episode and then a romp at the end. And my sources tell me that in the summer of 67, the song The Girl I Knew Somewhere was substituted for Last Train to Clarksville in the romp. But it also my sources also say that the song A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You was used, but it doesn't say where. So I'm not exactly sure where in the episode that song was substituted in, and I didn't want to get into this while the show was going on because we have limited time.
Yeah.
And then in 1970, during the CBS reruns, I know that the song Do You Feel It Too was substituted in, but again, I don't know which song it was substituted for. Probably the romp, but I don't know for sure. So if any of our listeners have one of these syndicated versions on videotape and were willing to run it and let me know which song went where, I'd be really grateful. I'd like to know.
Oh, yeah. I think we all would. And that's the great thing about the internet in terms of really bringing communities even closer together in terms of sharing information. So definitely, I know the Facebook group is pretty active. And hopefully we get some answers. All right, so now without further ado, we will start our scene-specific commentary for Your Friendly Neighborhood Kidnappers in 3, 2, 1.
So something that there are actually a couple things that I really love about the opening to this episode. The first thing is that the band that's on stage right now is playing what we've come to know in this show as incidental music. They're not actually playing a song. They're playing music you'd know that was happening when nothing was happening on the screen, like between scenes or whatnot.
Yeah.
I love that. And I also love the fact that this episode presents you with another band that the Monkees are in competition with on the local circuit. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear them talking about trying to get gigs, but here we are at a contest and you're seeing another band. So you're actually getting introduced to like almost like the real life of the Monkees, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool.
Absolutely. And also they're shown to be, you know, rude and crude and disgusting, which of course makes the Monkees look clean cut and nice by comparison, which is all part of that campaign to, you know, make them, even with their long hair, be, you know, acceptable to the moms and dads of America.
Yeah, the one dude smoking a cigar.
Yeah, oh, several of them were. I will point out that if you were a 12-year-old in 1966 and watching this show as it was being broadcast, this is the fourth episode shown. Up until now, you have not seen the Monkees perform as a group. You've got the album, you've heard the songs, you love them to death, and you're so excited at the prospect of actually tuning in and watching the Monkees be a rock and roll band. And up until now, they haven't done that. So you tune in tonight, and you see that opening, and you hear, oh, it's a band contest, and they're on next. Oh, this is awesome. We're finally going to get to see the what a rock and roll band is like when they're being a rock and roll band. And then finally it's their turn and they come on stage and they do a little tune up and Davey shakes his tambourine and Mike gives the countdown and you get Beethoven's Fifth Symphony instead. Mm. And then cut to the credits. Are you not pissed off at that point? So they were tantalizing the viewers. Keep tuning in. Maybe next week we'll get to see them be a band, but not this week.
You know, that is a great observation. As somebody who wasn't around to watch the show in its original run, that's really, really interesting and a perspective that some of us probably don't have.
Now, I love this scene that they're in right now where they're all at home doing something weird. Mickey's doing his Groucho Marx imitation. Peter's washing his socks in a cocktail shaker. Davey's doing a headstand on an easy chair in a very awkward position. And of course, Mike's, it looks like he's on a pogo stick.
It's like a makeshift pogo stick, though.
Well, you know, I used to be so impressed by the scene, and you know, I still am.
Yeah.
But he's not really on that pogo stick.
But Davey was really doing the headstand.
You can see it in Davey's face.
Yeah, and he did a really amazing dismount from, we missed it already.
It was amazing.
Yeah, when he got down from the chair, he actually pushed up with his hands on the arms of the chair before he flipped over. It was very athletic. But
that's an insurance liability nowadays.
But the pogo stick thing, if you watch the scene with the sound turned up, you'll hear his feet hitting the floor. So he's not on the pogo stick. He's just holding it in front of him.
Very cool camera trickery.
Yeah, it's really, he does it such an amazing job of holding that stick in the right position and then jumping in random directions that the illusion is amazing. But they didn't bother to mask out the sound of his feet hitting the floor.
Wow. Pretty cool.
So now we're at the Vincent Van Gogh.
I love that name.
You know, and yeah, it's a great name. And so, you know what? This is something, another thing I love about this episode is there's some continuity going on here. You know, there's going to be a mistaken clothes ripping incident. And the guy they mistakenly ripped the clothes off of, if you're paying attention, shows up at the very end of the episode. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I love that.
I think, overall,
you might not have picked up on that. But.
Yeah, I think overall the comedy in this episode is note perfect. There's so many gags that hit. There's some great callbacks. And I know this is an episode out of all the ones we've watched that this one I found myself laughing the most.
I'd like to point out that they really did tear the clothes off of that fellow. Nice. That's when I talk about callbacks. I'm going to bring that up again at the end of the episode. But that scene at the Vincent Van Gogh was filmed on the ballroom set. We're going to see it again in a minute. They hung blue curtains all around, but the door frame, you can see the double doors with the – I'm going to stop calling it puke green. I'll start calling it pea green, pea green paint.
You know, something that just hit me as I was watching this, that this is one of the only episodes that I can recall that you see a gag used twice. So you had the Monkees hidden behind a newspaper here, and you're going to see that again in the escape romp near the end. There's going to be a little thing where they're all hidden behind a newspaper.
Oh, I never noticed that before. That's a great catch. Of course, the quick drying cement is going to show up again.
That's a great gag, too.
I love these little kids. They want an autograph.
Yeah.
They're so smacks good. Peter on the head. So he really hits him, too. A lot of great gags. And so like Craig said, a lot of great laughs in this episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this scene really stuck out to me, too. He's really hitting that thing with the sledgehammer. He could have hit their hands.
Yeah, I'm sure it's all fake. You know, it might be foam rubber or something like that. But consider this. Mike gets through this scene without flinching. And he actually had one of his fingers permanently injured.
Oh, wow.
Accident with a hammer.
Really?
When he was a little boy. The ring finger on his right hand is if you ever watch him play, you'll see the way he holds his pick, that one finger doesn't move. Wow. And he somehow manages to get through that scene without flinching. I don't know how he does it.
Maybe he was like, you know what? Been there, done that. It's not that bad.
Very impressive.
So we got this shady manager who is pretty much setting up all these scenarios to ultimately convince him that staging a kidnapping is the best way to get the guy's publicity.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, not to derail that, Craig, hold that for a second. Another good continuity moment here is, you know, they just got their hands broken out of the concrete block and they're sitting on the chairs there with their hands still covered in concrete dust. So, you know, those scenes had to be filmed pretty much concurrently, or they had to put dust on their hands to film them later. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So good continuity stuff there.
Yeah. When they were doing the conversation, they were saying rhubarb, 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 rhubarb to each other. They do that in a lot of episodes. That's what extras say when they're supposed to be talking in the background of a scene.
Ah.
And this, I got to point out to you, this is the one thing about this episode that really gives me a bit of queasiness.
Mm-hmm.
We are actually watching a murder in progress.
Yeah. Yes, we are. And it's the introduction of Vic Tayback, of course.
It's a funny scene. I mean, the negotiation over how much to kidnap the guys is funny, but we are literally watching, well, not literally, it's acting, but still.
The setup for a murder,
that man is going to die.
Yeah, he's at the bottom of the Hudson to this day.
Yeah. Or the...
or no, I guess... yeah, well, it's funny because they reference the sales guy from New York, but I guess somewhere over, maybe at the bottom of the, somewhere in the Pacific.
Yeah, out near the Catalina Islands or something. Okay, I love this little bit of monkey magic.
Oh, I love that. That is so great. It's old school. And there's Peter that we see in the end with that same mask we see in the end credits.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
I love
and don't
the
we
work.
See him with the suit on and doing the smile thing too? Isn't that something we see again?
I don't think it's that moment. I think it's another moment.
Oh, it's similar.
His cutesy pie face.
Yeah.
I think Peter's really great in this sequence and in this episode overall. I think the references they make to him and then also a lot of his reaction shots just really, really crack me up.
Mm-hmm. And now this particular scene.
I love this.
James Frawley decided to shoot this on opposite sides of a two-way mirror. Not a two-way mirror, but a two-sided mirror. And so you get this incredible depth because each time you switch sides, you're seeing two of Mike and then two of Mickey and then two of Mike and then two of Mickey. The way this was shot is just so visually arresting.
Yeah, it's brilliant work.
It's a very well-written scene also. And then we wait.
Little outdoor tracking shot there.
Mm-hmm. So that's what North Beach Woods looks like. Now, I'm going to point out the sweet lady in this scene. She's played by Georgia Schmidt in an uncredited role. She actually appeared in the Monkees twice. She'll show up again in the second season wearing a leopard print mini dress.
Ooh, we'll have to make sure to point that out when it happens.
Absolutely.
So I love how nonchalant they are about, you know, these guys that just kicked in their front door with guns.
And the poor guy's got a horn he sticks in his ear.
Yeah.
This is before hearing aids.
I think even in 1966, that was an old-fashioned reference.
You know, Melanie, I meant to ask you, I mean, since you know these episodes so well, I don't remember how many times I've seen the Monkees guitar logo on the wall next to the front door. You see it there on the left? Was that always there?
I don't recall
that ever being there.
I'll have to go back and look. No, I don't remember either. It's kind of like the one that used to hang on the bass drum, but the one that hung on the bass drum was red.
Yeah, so I don't know if I've seen it with a blue background before.
Yeah, I'll have to check into that. Good catch.
There is so much to see on the walls and just around. I would love 10 minutes on that set.
Me too. Oh, and by the way, Mill, is this the introduction of Schneider?
Yes, it is. That's the first time Mr. Schneider appeared, at least in a prominent place. He might have been in the background in other scenes. I don't recall, but this is the first time he's actually, you know, pointed out and used in a story.
I always loved that dummy. He was so cool looking.
Now, check this out. They're about to put a title card on the screen. Cassius Clay, watch out. That's interesting because Cassius Clay changed his name to Muhammad Ali in 1964.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
A couple years late for that joke.
And he was at the time the reigning heavyweight champion of the world, but they got his name wrong.
I love how Davey's the only one that got to wear an interesting looking suit.
Yeah.
The other guys all had black suits on, but Davey got to wear this interesting red and black number with a bow tie.
Yeah. And he's dancing with a character who is being played by Val Carey's. This is her second appearance. I pointed her out last time in Monkey vs. Machine. This is her first speaking role on the show.
Excellent.
And that role was written for her.
Ah. So she has invited basically the entire dance club back to the monkey's pad.
Mm-hmm.
And poor Vic Tayback is freaking out.
Wouldn't
he
you?
He plays this role very well. Yeah, I mean, compared to other roles I've seen him in, this is kind of one of the more wacky slapstick roles.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's the same jukebox that we saw earlier at the club.
And yeah.
And what song is this, Craig?
This is Let's Dance On. This is, if you're going to have a party, this is the song you play.
Exactly.
Now, let me ask you something, guys. I don't know if this stood out to you, but for this really stuck out to me as a kind of an eyebrow raising moment. Is these guys are supposedly a struggling band who are, you know, struggling to get gigs, but yet they have their own record on their jukebox.
Okay,
why would they even have
a
record?
Why would they even have a jukebox?
Yeah, well, a jukebox maybe they could come by, but why would they have their own record in their jukebox when they can't even get gigs? They're doing talent shows, but they have a whole record out?
I think it's a little meta reference.
Yeah, yeah.
I just love the way this scene was shot. All the chaos that's going on, the people going up and down the spiral stairs while he's on the phone, the camera angles are just amazing. I love this scene.
Yeah, and you, none of it looks planned, which is what I really like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looks like everybody was just told, dance, move around, and Vic's going to attempt to tie you up.
You know, and this is a concept that I'm surprised never caught on and kept on going to this day, a party where everyone's tied together with a rope. Don't you think that would be a heck of a lot of fun?
Oh, Jeff, that's kinky.
Whoa, we're getting a little bit dirty here on the color cast.
So chaos continues to reign, and now the staff of the Vincent Van Gogh show up with all of their supplies and furniture.
I love this. This is like they're setting up a satellite location with a guest list and a velvet rope.
And Vic Tayback is counting people up by hashing marks on the wall.
And because I'm an accountant, I have to point this out. I actually did the math on the numbers that they're quoting over the phone. And at one point, he says they got 36 kids and it'll be $12,000. Mm-hmm. I did the dividing. That's exactly, actually, at $3,600, $12,000, that works out to 33 and one-third kids.
Wow. 33 to third. That's kind of interesting.
Oh, just and you know what? I'll go ahead and know. So the plot thickens here, by the way. On the jukebox thing. Now, the first song we heard was Let's Dance On the first record. The second song is Stepping Stone, which is on the second record. So now they have both of their records in the jukebox?
Well, they had their records before anyone else did, right?
Well, Let's Dance On wasn't a single, was it? Or was it a B-side?
It was the B-side, too.
Okay, so it could have been in there.
Yeah, this episode aired long before Stepping Stone was available to the public, but that's true of a lot of their songs. They came out on the show before they were available on vinyl.
And Melanie, you said that the instrumentals for this track were recorded the same week as the show?
Yeah, there was actually recording going on the same time this episode was being filmed. And the instrumental tracks for Last Train to Clarksville and I'm Not Your Stepping Stone were both recorded this week, as was the instrumental track for Mary Mary. And Mm-hmm. They also recorded vocals for Mary Mary, Sweet Young Thing, and You Just May Be the One during this week.
It's really amazing, and we've talked about it before, and on our regular episodes we've talked about this, but it really is amazing to think that in addition to, you know, working a full TV production schedule, they were tracking vocals and sometimes instruments, you know, at the same time. That's really an amazing, amazing, probably grueling schedule.
Yeah, Mickey talks about it in his autobiography, and there are other places I've seen it referenced, Davey's autobiography as well, that they would shoot from like 7 in the morning until right around dinner time, 5 or 6 in the evening, grab dinner, and then from 7 to midnight they'd be in the recording studio.
It's really remarkable.
Yeah.
It is. And I love that Mickey references the fact that there's going to be a light bulb above his head when he does the post-production for this episode. Notice that it says Denver Chamber of Commerce on the wall.
Where would they
get that from? They're not in Denver.
The pad is so random. Everything is random in their pad.
There's no beach in Denver.
There's a Las Vegas poster on the wall right now.
Oh, yeah, look at that with the showgirls.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Wow.
Now, they're about to throw Peter out the window to get attention, but in a moment they're going to say they're on the first floor. Now, if they're on the ground floor, then why don't they all just climb out the window?
Yeah. Little mental powers for Mickey there, freezing and unfreezing Peter. I love that.
Little monkey magic going on, yep.
And we had Peter directly addressing the screen, which is always great.
Yeah, fourth wall break.
Yeah, he keeps giving the time references constantly. In fact, we're about to get us 6:30 Central time.
Yeah, I love the fourth wall breaks. I love them.
So, now what crazy things are you going to try?
So, yeah, this is all just monkeys attempting to figure out ways to escape their captors.
Without climbing out the window.
Okay. I guess the fistful of coins.
Yeah. Okay, now what?
I love how the monkey, it shows up at the card table, by the way. It's all over the apartment, but it shows up. And here's Mickey Mad Scientist once again with nitroglycerin.
Right.
He does this so well.
Yeah.
Yeah, the crazed scientist look. I love it. And the guys call out for the bluff here, but they're like, well, maybe they're not bluffing. Yeah, this was a really funny scene for Mickey, I think.
It's such a stupid ploy, but Mickey sells it with that wild-eyed look that you really have to overplay that just to pull it off, and they did. Yeah. They made it believable.
Yeah, Mickey looks like something out of like a 1930s Universal horror picture.
Yeah, he really does. And of course, it's really nitroglycerin. It's a big cloud of smoke outside. I love the camera shake with the smoke. Classic effect.
Yeah.
Very Star Trek, actually.
Now, this whole romp is imaginary. That's not their pad they're escaping from. The bad guys are not chasing them through the streets. For God's sakes, the monkeys have a car. They went outside, got in the car, and drove to the venue. But in their imaginations, there's this chase going on.
Yeah, it's obviously a back lot somewhere. I wonder what that set was. It looked almost like a Western. But
yeah, that's probably the Columbia Ranch. They did most of their location filming on the Columbia Ranch. There was a small back lot in Burbank that is, I think, where the little pocket-sized park is, and I'll point that out in a minute. We'll see the little pocket park.
There's another Western scene, by the way. Craig, I wonder if that's one of the scenes they used in a Star Trek episode, like Spectre of the Gun.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
I wonder.
Although, would Desilu have been using the Columbia Ranch?
Probably not. Good call. More unicycles.
Yeah.
With training wheels.
Yeah, with the training wheels. Yeah. It's still impressive.
Half a car.
Yeah. This is almost like a junkyard, but I'm not sure if that would be
there's
on a
your park,
lot.
Right? And this here's the second monk newspaper game.
Yeah, right? That's actually amazing, the way they're stacked up on top of each other there. But this is the same park that we see in the romp with the dogs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or, I'm going to buy me a dog. It shows up in about a dozen episodes.
Now, has anybody tried to freeze frame that and see if that's really Davy jumping over the bush? Because it sure looks like him. Another stunt.
You know what? After the headstand, I'll believe anything I see in this series that Davy does.
He is incredibly athletic.
Yeah.
Every now and then you'll see him do something that's just remarkably athletic.
I'm just surprised that they would let him do that stuff, knowing how valuable the four of them were. He could have broken his neck.
Yeah. I asked Mickey about whether the show had used a stunt coordinator or safety equipment or anything like that. He told me he couldn't remember, which is kind of sad because there are a lot of really crazy things that go on. This is the closest we're going to see to them performing in this episode. It's the tail end of that Last Train to Clarksville performance that we've seen in two other episodes.
Peter and Pain Face. I love that.
Yeah. So theoretically, we could have been listening to The Girl I Knew Somewhere because we didn't actually see them singing in that clip. I'm not sure how it would have fit with their motions, but what the heck. And there's a wonderful breaking the fourth wall moment there with Peter saying, we'll be right back after this commercial.
And here's the callback that Jeff alluded to earlier.
Yep. And I love the big fake out ending here.
Yeah.
This is so great. It's disappointing for the audience and for the monkeys at the same time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you want them to win, and Davy thinks they've won, everybody thinks they've won.
Well, he even said, we'd like to congratulate the monkeys, but that was just for making it there. And here's Lester Crabtree and the four crabs.
Like, he's ready this time for his clothes to be ripped off.
Once again, they are literally ripping apart that suit.
And he loves it. loves it.
What's about to happen is the monkeys are going to say, hey, all you got to do is get your clothes torn off. And there's sound effects of tearing cloth as they supposedly tear each other's shirts off.
Yep.
But watch them. They're not tearing anything. Not a stitch is harmed on any of those shirts.
Those shirts were probably too valuable.
Yep. I'm betting they were told not to rip each other's shirts. Expensive wardrobe.
So now that we get we're a minute short gag.
Peter says, why don't you time your shows better?
Some funny commentary from Mike here too.
It's actually, I think it's not that funny at all. It's almost like Rafelson is poking him with a stick and trying to get him to say something interesting and sort of self-revealing.
Mm-hmm.
You can see how uncomfortable he is talking about it. And
well, I kind of like it because I think it adds to that dark Mike mystique that you kind of have.
Certainly, Rafelson knew what he was doing. He knew that if he stuck a camera in front of Mike and poked him with that stick, that Mike was going to say something that was worth showing on TV. But it does make me kind of sad because it does look like he's very uncomfortable in that situation. And the cuts that they do of the other three, you know, mugging for the camera and saying bizarre things Peter says something bizarre right there. it's just that since they only use one camera, they must have edited that together.
Yeah.
What Peter says, the universe is permeated with the smell of turpentine, that was saying apparently, I read in a teen magazine that he was saying a lot those days, and it means it all stinks.
I also love Mike's sort of groovy and digging and all the other, I guess, the hip lingo from the mid to late 60s. I love hearing that in casual speak, where if you said that now, people would think you came out of a time warp or something. So I always enjoy seeing that in the actual time period where it was sort of developed. So, wow, we are at the end of the episode already. I can't believe it. The episode flew by. So I guess while we still have time, let's talk about our most valuable monkey, our MVM for this episode. And I'm going to go first because I think I have sort of possibly a controversial choice. And I'm going to say the MVM for this episode for me is Peter Tork.
Whoa.
And I referenced earlier Peter in the changing scene and his reactions. And I think Peter is just utilized for so many comedic moments in this episode that really showcases what he added to the band, to the show, and what his personality brought to things, or the personality that was chosen for him. So I think Peter really shines in this episode without really having too big of a spotlight on him. So I am saying that my most valuable monkey is Peter Tork.
Good choice. Good choice.
Jeff, why don't you go?
Oh, wow. Well, I don't know if my choice is the obvious choice or not, but I'm going to go Davey on this one. I love the fact that that the guys choose to wait for the kidnappers, but Davey's like, the heck with this. I'm going out with my girlfriend. And he goes out dancing instead of waiting for the kidnappers. And he has like a total nonchalant attitude about getting kidnapped. He's like, the guy shows up. He's like, yeah, wait till this dance is over and whatever. And he brings the people back. Like, he doesn't give a crap at all. I love Davey in this episode. He cracks me up. And I usually tend to go with the monkey that makes me laugh the most for the MVM. And for this one, it's probably Davey.
And he also does that headstand, so.
Yeah, awesome. Stunts notwithstanding.
Yeah, go back and watch that. How he gets out of that headstand. It really is a very impressive move.
All right, Melanie?
Okay, well, my choice usually has to do something with a particularly good job done by one of the four actors. And in this case, I'm going to give my MVM to Mike for that wonderful scene with the make-believe pogo stick.
Nice.
Even though he wasn't really on a pogo stick, he made it look like he was on a pogo stick. And that's not easy to do.
Not at all.
And deliver all that dialogue with perfect comedic timing at the same time.
Excellent, excellent. So we have three different choices this episode. Please make sure to let us know yours over on the Facebook group. And that brings us to the end of another Monkeys Color Cast commentary. And we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to tonight's Monkeys Color Cast. I'm your announcer, Ghosty Timmers. Now, back to the show.
Another excellent Monkeys Color Cast commentary. Great job. You guys nail it every time. Thank you so much for what you do for all of us.
Oh, thank you. I know we really enjoy recording them, so to know that people are responding well is really, really great.
You know, every once in a while, Rhino blesses us with some very cool stuff, and I'm holding in my hands right now something called the Summer 1967, the complete U.S. concert recordings. And this is out of 3,500, this is number 3,078, numbered limited edition. It's a pretty cool package. It's got four discs, and it's basically concerts from August of 1967. We've got Mobile, Alabama, Seattle, Washington, Portland, Oregon, and Spokane, Washington. And I think that basically this is where the single 1967 disc came from.
Yeah, that's the one that I'm familiar with.
Yeah. Jeff, do you have any thoughts on the single 1967 disc?
Well, I can remember when I actually got it. I was a little kid when it came out, and I think my initial reaction to it was I didn't like it as much back then. I guess the recording, the quality of the recording kind of bugged me. I didn't realize, I guess when I was a little kid, that the Monkees concerts were a little bit like the Beatles concerts that I had heard, with the screaming and the yelling, and that kind of bothered me. But I think that it could have definitely used a bit of remastering. But back then, that was kind of still when CDs were still pretty new. And they were just kind of putting out whatever they could put out without cleaning it up too much. So I'm sure whichever edition is out that you have now is much, much better than the single disc that I have.
Well, actually, this is a warts and all kind of thing. This is part of the handmade set thing that Rhino does. And you're getting warts and all on this. Like, for example, disc 4, which I was listening to in my car when I was driving around this week. It's so funny because Mickey's having this problem where his mic just will not stay up. And guys, you know, if anyone's ever had that problem, you know, that's why you have roadies to come fix your mic, so. Anyway, but for the first song, you know, he's trying to implore someone on the stage crew that if you want a Monkees concert, you need me to sing, basically. So check this tiny little clip out.
Hello, then. Welcome to the 1967 Olympics.
Don't make me laugh. I have chapped lips, Peter. Please, please.
Great setup again, boys. Hi, this is David Pearl. He's trying to fix the microphone stand.
It's broken.
It's broken. It's broken.
Beautiful.
It's broken.
Hey, I'm sorry we're so late, but we have a... The crew messed up on Mickey's mic, and that's Nico over there fixing it. Say hello to Nico. Hello, Nico. Thank you, Nico.
Ken, I wanted to ask you, the set list was pretty much the same for all four of these shows, right?
Yes, yeah. The standard set list was pretty much an introduction, Last Train to Clarksville, You Just May Be the One, The Girl That I Knew Somewhere, I Want to Be Free, Sunny Girlfriend, Your Auntie Griselda, Forget That Girl, Sweet Young Thing, Mary Mary, Cripple Creek, You Can't Judge a Book by the Cover, Gonna Build a Mountain, I Got a Woman, I'm a Believer, Randy Scouse Git, and I'm Not Your Stepping Stone. So occasionally there's a song dropped out, and, you know, but it's pretty much the standard set that they had. I want to play this version of Davy Jones singing I Want to Be Free. Let's check this out.
And now, the Velvet Voice Midget will sing that song so dear to our hearts.
I wanna be free, like the bluebirds, and by me, like the waves out on the blue sea. If your love has to tie me, to guide me, confide in me, won't
you. Thank you very much.
So you can hear that it's very raw, you know. It's very raw. And then there's other funny things, like, for example, Mickey needs to have his bass drum nailed down because it's walking forward as he's trying to play during Last Train to Clarksville.
Thank you! Guess what? My bass drum isn't nailed down either. There's no business like show business. There's no business I know. All the lousy equipment that you have on stage. what? All right, sock it to me. We all know that you may just be the one. Sock it to me.
But it's an interesting document, and every so often I want to play something off of these on the show. They're very hard to come by nowadays, and they're getting very pricey. It's interesting to have this stuff from a historical standpoint, and that's pretty much how you would feel about the 1967 single disc version, I would imagine, right, guys?
Yeah, the one thing that I took away listening to it, and admittedly I haven't listened to it that many times because for me it's kind of a tough listen, just because, you know, you really kind of feel like you're there in the crowd. It's, you know, the crowd noise isn't pumped in. It's a bunch of screaming teenagers, which is pretty awesome to hear, but a little distracting. But the one thing that I really dig is that they entertain the entire time. So in the lead up to songs, in between songs, you're getting sometimes some really, you know, lengthy skits.
Yeah, they do like shtick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm surprised that there was never a full concert filmed. Because you have, like, the episode Monkeys on Tours. You would have thought that they just would have recorded the whole thing. You know, nowadays that would have happened, but I guess back then you just shot what you shot.
Yeah.
Or do you think that's out there somewhere? I wonder.
You never know. There's a lot of stuff still sitting around in archives, so you never know. I always wondered what it was like, and this is something that I would ask an original Gen Monkees fan who was at one of these concerts, is what was the reaction of the crowd to these four songs that no one had heard? You know, everybody's hearing all these hits that they're used to, but then you get Cripple Creek, and you can't judge a book by looking at its cover, which were essentially like solo songs for the guys. And, you know, especially Cripple Creek was very strange.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like almost like a backwoods bayou type song. And then, of course, Mike's song was kind of had a little more of a country feel to it. But I was always wondering, because when I originally saw the track list when I was a little kid, I'm like, oh, four songs I'd never heard. This is going to be great. And when I got to them, I'm like, these are a little bit strange.
Yeah. But like you said, they were pretty much set up just to feature the individual guys. It was kind of like their little solo spot moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was strange seeing Mike go nuts on the holding the maracas while he's performing and all that stuff. It's kind of weird just to see him flail about like that.
Well, hopefully we've got some original fans who can comment on that in the Facebook group.
That would be great. We mentioned about, like, if there was a full concert ever, you know, filmed or whatever. Just off the top of your head, and this could be like its own show, but I just want to kind of run this by you right now. So the 50th anniversary is pretty much upon us, and we're seeing like the new Batman DVD Blu-ray set come out from 1966 and all that. What would you like to see if they re-release the Monkees TV show? What kind of bonus material and different things would you like to see? Any thoughts along those lines?
I have really only have one request on that front, and, you know, I'll forego bonus material. I know other people are into bonus material, but I would like them to clean up the soundtracks to these shows and get it a little bit higher quality than it is now. So if you watch the DVDs, I mean, it's okay. It sounds like a TV show, but
right.
It would be nice if they went back and remastered the sound on these shows. And in the same time, if you want a bonus thing, if they would put a CD or two inside the box with the incidental music on it, I would love that.
That would be awesome. Just so we could hear things like this. And this.
And Jeff, I would actually go a little bit farther there and say, clean up the film elements as well. This was a show that was shot on film. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we talk about Star Trek every week on the tricorder transmissions, and we've watched those episodes on Blu-ray. And the detail that you see in those, based on the fact that they took these film elements and restored them, is pretty amazing. Sitting down and doing these color cast commentaries for the Monkees, a lot of times I see deficiencies in the film image and say, wow, it would be great if this was really, really cared for. I would also like possibly some kind of retrospective documentary where you go out and talk to anybody who's still around to talk about it, and maybe do a hour and a half to 2 hour documentary that sort of chronicles the show from start to finish and use people's memories of it. And I love documentaries like that, and I think that would really be a neat bonus feature for me.
Makes sense. I'll tell you what I'd love is a Monkees video jukebox.
Awesome.
So anything that, like, where the romp would end, they'd maybe add a little bit of extra to get the whole song in there, you know, just kind of pad out to make sure that we have videos of every song that, you know, that they can do. I think that would be so cool just to have it on the fly. I remember when the Monkees were shown on MTV, my friend Branton Lewis, shout out to him, we both bought VCRs, and we around the clock recorded the MTV marathons and got like every episode.
Nice.
And then because we had those two VCRs, we would take the performance videos, and we made our own compilation. Of course, I no longer have the ability to watch it or anything, but it was fun making that, and it was nice to be able to sit down and watch, you know, just Monkees videos. That was cool. Of course, we have YouTube for that, but it would be cool if you're going to go to that point, just make a video jukebox. Wouldn't it be cool to have like this video jukebox, and you'd see like, what am I doing hanging around? And it would look like an old jukebox, and you could just click on it and boom, or you could do play all.
Yeah.
That would just be awesome. So that's kind of what I would like on top of, you know, the remastering and all that.
Or they could do an interactive create your own video type thing, and they have little snips of all the different romps, and you can just kind of mix and match the ones you like and put a song behind it.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Either way, I think, Ken, you're hitting on a really important point in the fact that as the 50th anniversary approaches, there really should be a concerted effort, I guess, on Rhino's part to do something special with the TV show, because there's definitely a market for it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, up next on Zilch, we're going to talk to Victor Penaluza, who is from the band The Phantoms. And
this is Victor Penaluza from The Phantoms, and you're listening to Zilch, a Monkees podcast.
And joining us on the Zilch Monkees hotline is a fine gentleman by the name of Victor Penaluza. Am I saying that right?
Yes, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I know that you listen to our podcast show as well, and I know you're a Monkees fan as well. You are from a band called The Phantoms, and you have an album out. What's the name of your album?
It's self-titled.
Self-titled. Very good. The Phantoms.
Yeah.
And you have a song that's of particular interest to Monkee fans. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
The name
of the track?
Is this going to get me in trouble?
No, it's not going to get you in trouble.
No, it's just a song that we wrote. It's called One for the Road. It's about being out with your friends and having a few beers and hanging out by the jukebox listening to your favorite music, you know, basically the gist of the song. I listed the bridge part from a Sunny Girlfriend, you know.
Mm-hmm. And when I heard it, I was gobsmacked. I was like, wow, this guy's a real Monkees fan. That's so cool.
Yeah. Well, it just kind of came out, you know. When you're writing songs and you're throwing ideas around, you just kind of let it flow out of you, you know. And then the song needed a bridge, and it just felt natural to jump to that, like, E minor chord, you know. Like, I heard it coming. Just like Michael Nesmith does it on the Sunny Girlfriend. And I was really conscious of it, and I didn't want it to be... I worked on it for a while. I tried changing the vocal melody, you know, so it wouldn't be the same as Michael Nesmith. And it didn't really work. And finally, I just kind of sort of kept it and just changed the lyrics a little bit, you know.
Wow.
But it's still very similar, and I have other Monkee friends of mine that have pointed it out, you know. So in a way, it's really more of a tribute, you know. I'm not really ripping anybody off. It's just more of a tribute, like the rest of the song, you know. I name drop the Birds and the Beach Boys,
right?
And then I come in with this Monkees chord progression, you know.
Cool. Your band seems to be like an almost an homage to the music that you love. What do you feel about the Monkees music? How do you feel about the Monkees music? Let us know.
See, I love it. It's some of the most important music to me, anyway, you know, especially growing up with the Monkees on reruns on television, you know, like in the early 80s when I was going to kindergarten, I would watch the Monkees on reruns while I had my cereal, and then followed by the Monkees would be That Girl with Marlo Thomas, and then I had to go, you know, to kindergarten for like 2 hours or something. But even as I started getting into music and buying my own records, buying Monkees cassettes, like I was always reading the liner notes, you know, and trying to get familiar with the names of the musicians and the songwriters and stuff like that, you know. And they always had killer songwriters, and Neil Diamond, Harry Nilsson, you know, Boyce and Hart. I mean, you can't beat those guys, man. They know how to write songs, you know?
Absolutely. It's weird, as a guitar player, I've always kind of look at Mike as my guitar hero of the Monkees, you know, just as I did with, like, Ace and Kiss. And though he didn't play everything that we thought that he did when we were kids or whatever, was he an influence on you? I mean, you went to that for some reason.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, he was always my favorite Monkey right away.
Excellent.
Coolest one, you know, just his personality. I mean, I don't know him personally, but just from the TV shows, you know, you kind of feel like you know these guys. You know, you watch the TV shows so many times, you know.
Right,
and you have kind of, you have one favorite, you know, and he's always seemed like the cool one. You know, he had the coolest tunes. You know, he had that beautiful Gretsch guitar, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, do you want to intro your track?
Sure. It's a song called One for the Road. It's off our debut album. You can get it on iTunes. It's just called The Phantoms. Thank you, Ken, for playing it and for having me on Zilch.
Not a problem. We love hearing great music, especially music that, you know, people that love the Monkees. And when you incorporate something into a song like this, it's just so cool.
Oh, wow, thanks. I thought I was trying to be sneaky, but I don't know. Monkey fans are too smart, you know?
Well, I know that when I heard it, I was like, I got to contact this guy. So it was just
cool. Thanks.
Well, Victor, I want to thank you for being on the show. But before you go, what's your favorite Monkees song?
Oh, man. I got Love Is Only Sleeping, The Door Into Summer, Funny yeah. Girlfriend. I mean, it's got to be a Michael Nesmith song for sure. You know?
Well, it's kind of like Lay's potato chips. It's hard to pick just one. So
yeah.
All right.
Love Is Only Sleeping, and I'll go with that one.
Yeah, Love Is Only Sleeping is awesome. Excellent. I want to thank you for being on the show today and taking a few minutes of your busy day to monkey around with us.
All right. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Zilch listeners.
Hi, Zilch fans. This is Melanie Mitchell. Be sure to check out my book, Monkey Magic, a book about a TV show about a band. It's a lighthearted review and companion for the TV show that made the 60s fun. The paperback is available online from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and the ebook can be bought anywhere that fine ebooks are sold. Check out the Monkey Magic Facebook page, follow me on Tumblr at bluemoonalto.tumblr.com, and listen for my contributions here on Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
And now, a message from Fred Velez.
Hello, Zilchers. Fred Velez, author of A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkees from a Fan's Perspective here. As we are all looking toward the holiday season, some Monkee fans and myself, including John Raginski and Paul Venturi of The Monkee Files, Chris Pick, Danny Salazzi of The Characters, and Linda Walsh, have gotten together to record a Monkees-themed holiday album titled A Little Bit Christmas, mixing Christmas favorites with Monkee tunes, with a few little surprises mixed in. See if you can find the hidden track. The CD will be ready in early November, and if you would like to pre-order or help with the funding, go to www.gofundme.com/FTHK94. Everyone who contributes $10 or more will receive a free CD signed by yours truly. And Ken will be playing some of the tracks on the upcoming Zilch Holiday Extravaganza. I think you'll like it.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll call it a podcast, guys. What do you think?
Sounds great. Right on, yeah.
It's always great monkeying around with you. Here we go. Walking down, the, down street. The street. We get the funniest looks from everyone.
Isn't that dumb?
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burke. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
Hello, Spokane! We'd like to do a song now off of the Monkees album called Headquarters, and the name of the song is Scroungy Girlfriend.
Tune in next week, ladies and gentlemen, for another minute short.
Okay, well, I guess we'll call it a podcast, guys. What do you think?
Sounds great.
Right on, yeah.
All right, well, it's always great monkeying around with you. I'll fix that in post. It's always great monkeying around.
Somebody bought Ken a dog.
It's always great monkeying around with you. You missed it, didn't you?
Oh, awesome.
What was that, hon?
Oh, I said okay. Awesome.
Well, I didn't call you hon, Jeff. I mean, Craig.
That was Craig.
Sorry, I'm...
Episode 16.
Friendly Neighborhood Kidnappers. Okay. All right. What episode is this, guys?
Let me double check real quick.
Is it going to be 16?
16.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yep. I thought you were going to yell it at me.
Oh. Totally blew that one. Okay.
That's editing time. Mm-hmm. Okay. What episode is this, guys?
Episode 16.
Your Friendly Neighborhood Kidnappers Commentary. You want to cut that again?
You must be joking.
That's my line.
I'm sorry.
You must be joking. My name's David Jones, and I think I love you.
What's the name of that other band, the one with the blood and the makeup? Kiss? No, thanks. You know, they have high heels and the guy has a 9-foot tongue. What is their name?
Kiss?
No, but Davey wants one.
Oh, I remember reading in the paper where due to lack of interest, tomorrow was canceled.